Mr. Wilmot, Reel 4. Now, we're coming to the point, roughly speaking, when you first got news of possibility of move to Ireland. Well, you didn't get much notice.
We didn't know we were moving, but we didn't know we were going to Ireland. We didn't know. Somebody knew. We didn't know at all. We eventually, when the regiment was formed up, so many went on train, and there was a big convoy going. And of course, by now, we had, and I can't tell you how many, but we had a lot of motorbikes by now. I don't think we had the full strength of motorbikes, but we had a lot of it through squadron, fully trained in motorbikes, but nobody really in charge of them, okay? And that was what we had. And we were then moving to Glasgow, we were told, and we were down there. We didn't have maps, I may tell you. No maps. We just had to get up the road. And there. Now, this is where my career really started in the fighting for the young age, because I seemed to just want to be in charge of this whole thing. And I was moving up, and I devised the system of working ahead of the convoy with about so many blocks, friends of mine, and then they would drop them off at wide junctions and crossroads, and they would wave them through, and then they liked it, because the minute they waved them through, they had to switch back the whole convoy to come up to me at the top, you see. So we worked it very well, and I was working this whole thing through to get up there. We were helped through the towns, as I recall, by the police, but we didn't know where we were going really, and we were working on, we knew we had to go from Aldershot to such and such a place, another place, and we just went to town to town to town, all the way up. And we were working on the DRs, and the DRs were working in advance of the squadron, in advance of officers, I may tell you. They were quite happy to be back. And we were then covering all areas that might have caused the convoy to go wrong or split up. We left the DR there to look after it, to get it through, and we went straight up and onto the boats. And then we came off and onto Dungannon. Now, Dungannon. Mainly because of the work I was doing on the bikes and enjoying it so much, I became a corporal, I think, in Dungannon, in charge of the bikes. Now, by this time, we had five sections of seven bikes, I think, and I was there in charge of this thing. And we did that, and we started heavy training then. By this time, we were getting...
Where were you billeted at Dungannon?
In houses. I was in a house. There were people in church halls as well. But as it so happened, they also took over houses with rooms in them. You know, a very good quality house. And we got rooms, and with being soldiers, we made sure we got the ones in the rooms that we wanted to do.
Now, what exactly training were you doing there?
By the time we got in again, I was personally heavily involved in training the dispatch riders. Because we then discovered that even when we ever went to war with the tanks, we were going to be allocated to squadrons. And we would be riding behind the squadron leader's staff for messages to within each squadron and messages back to RHQ. And we were spread all over and working through various squadrons. So that means then, of course, we did exercise there. We had marked 16 tanks. Like, up to then, I hadn't been involved in the tanks. I'd been involved totally in the communication side of the war. Tanks were tanks, and I was putting them in.
Now, we haven't mentioned the tanks, because last time we heard was just the Rolls Royce, you know, the armoured car.
Never in a tank at all, up until later on, with Mark 6B, but we had Mark 6B, I'm sure that's what it was, Mark 6B, because we had a mannequin.
Which type of Mark 6B is the type of, what type of tank?
Well, it had a machine gun in it,
had it. It's just called Mark 6B.
My name comes to me, so it must be something. They were called, they had little tanks, three of a crew, the commander and a gunner operator and a driver, crew of three. Mark 6B's, as I recall. I've pictured them from Ireland as well, so I remember them from that. But they may have another name, but they were only equipped by a machine gun. And we went on exercises with them, of course, and we took the messages back and forward and did that. And then, of course, we were learning then to become the main communication force of them. Because I can never recall why this has been mentioned, ever, except when we changed the old mindset.
So
we did many exercises in Northern Ireland.
Do you remember anything about any of the exercises in particular?
No, well, other than being on them and carrying out, I usually worked with a man, Major Moon. He was a squadron leader, Major Teddy Moon, and I worked with him, and he and I got away. I could swish up and get a message from him, take it down and swish it with it cracking. It was all part of this game sort of thing, you see. And there's no question of anybody going to be shooting anybody. But we did that. We also did a lot of exercises along the border, of course, because remember, when we went to Northern Ireland, as I understand it, we were about the only equipped cavalry unit that was left. Most of them had left their equipment in France, and most of them were over in France. When we were in Algeria, one of the things which is out of context, we were training to go over to France to relieve the first line, to let the first line come back somewhere out the road and get served, because they'd been thrown in at the deep end to go with the 51st Highland Division. And as I understand it, we were being trained to go over to France to relieve them. And of course, D-Day came along.
Dunkirk, you mean?
Dunkirk, I'm sorry. Dunkirk came along, and of course, that's when we went to Ireland after Dunkirk. So that was D-Day again, you see. I don't remember this. After Dunkirk.
I think it was June, yeah.
And it had to be because we were equipped. We had equipment by now, you see. And I don't know what all the equipment, we had that, and then Mark 6B tanks, and we were going there to patrol the border in case the invasion came from where they would have expected to come, from Southern Ireland. And when we were there, I also remember putting extra petrol tanks were brazed onto the back of the 6Bs so that we could use them, drop them off, and then reach the south of Ireland. But I'm saying that, although I never did it, because I just felt that I was always there about, you see, always jolly on the spot, and I know that was happening.
They really were preparing for possible operations in Southern Ireland.
Absolutely, as I recall the training was always based on the fact that if Germany was to invade, they wouldn't come the Channel way, they would come in through Southern Ireland. If they came in through Southern Ireland, they would meet a little opposition, but they would also meet a lot of friends. And we would then have to get down through Ireland as soon as we possibly could. Now, this is training as a soldier at my level, knew it. And that's why the auxiliary tank on the bank was a thing they just brought out, so that with that we could get further down, not using the actual tank petrol, until we were well down the road. And this is why I picked this up, of course, in my position as being involved with messages between RHQ, HQ, and all here. And that was it. And all the exercises were based on that, and we used to go down to Newry, along the border. We have probably careful, but we had chaps went abroad, went over, but they were sent back. I mean, the way the border is in Northern Ireland, between Northern and South, they were in there, but nobody was ever kicked. But there was occasions where someone strayed across.
But you never did?
I never did, but people did, and they were sent back. There was no question of internment.
Now, what about map reading?
Map reading became vital, and I was heavily engaged in map reading courses and everything to do with map reading.
Tell us about what was it to learn on a map reading course?
There was nobody to teach us at all. And nobody was teaching at all. We had a Lieutenant Bell came in to be in charge of the bikes. He was not me. I was by this time in charge of the bikes, you see. So Captain Bell was in charge of all the bikes. But he really let me more or less run the show, you see. Because I've been doing this now for all the time, I've been in the army, and it was meat and drink to me, and everything I had to do was about, so he let me do it. So we devised all sorts of reasons. One of the best schemes we came up with for teaching map reading was that what I did was, we started out and we mapped out, and we would give the map reader, we would give them the first map reference, which could be any place. And I had somebody sitting at the first map reference, giving them the second map reference. Now, if they didn't reach the first map reference because they got lost, and they didn't reach the second. And we trained them hard on that system, whereby they had to go around a whole circuit with reference at the time being given by somebody at the point. And we trained them well, and by and large, we ended up with a whole group of very good map readers, better than some of the tank commanders we had at any time. They were excellent, that group. And the basis of that, one of the things I have to say now, the basis of that 35 people we keep the pieces of the regiment in tanks for the regiment when we got our other tanks. They all became that, and many of them were put out to squadron. But the training that 35 got was excellent. Now, this was in Northern Ireland. All sorts of things happened in Northern Ireland. I was getting sent a lot of courses by now, you see.
What were they then?
I really like courses, and I took a drink of information and brought it back. But when I was in Northern Ireland, somebody realised that we had to learn a lot about hand grenades, Mills hand grenades. They were going to be quite useful in time, and nobody in the squadron, nobody in the regiment knew anything about them. So I was sent to Ballykinlan, to an infantry regiment. Ballykinlan was a camp there. And I was sent to this infantry regiment to learn about hand grenades. And I was to pass it, which I did.
What do you remember of that course?
Well, I remember a lot about the course. I remember the difference of the attitude and the atmosphere in this regiment that I was going for a few days or a week, whatever, as opposed to what I had in the 5th and 4th for Yeomanry. We were apart. We were something totally different. But I went to an infantry battalion to learn about this. I can't remember who they were, but there was a different atmosphere. There seemed to be nothing, there was nothing get-togetherness, there was no friendliness, it was all different. And I was taken out to the Ballykinlan range and shown what a mill grenade was, what it looked like, how to throw it, how to do it. And one of the things he told me on this course, I'll never forget this, he says, now, if you throw a hand grenade and it doesn't explode, he says, that's very dangerous, he says. So what you do, he says, on the course, we didn't do it. He says, you pull out you walk off off the range, and you pull out the pin, and you put your second grenade down beside the one that hasn't exploded, and you get back to the dugout quickly. Well, the first time I was teaching the box in the 5th and 4th, it happened, and I had to do it. I had to go over and take a pin out, release it, and put it down, and get back in where they were all sitting. And none of them realised that was the first time I'd done it, I may tell you. You know, when you threw it, and it was blind, and it didn't blow off, I said, no. And the colonel was there at the time. I can't remember who the colonel was at that time. We lost Colonel Sandy Black. We lost him in Dungannon. He left us. We got another colonel. So that was hand grenades. Then they sent me on, with this time I was getting meant for other things possibly, they sent me on a wireless, a tank compass course. I think I went on the wireless one first.
What about the wireless course then?
They sent me on a wireless course, and we were in Ireland, and they sent me on this wireless course to Bovington. Now, there was a thing, I had to get over to Bovington to get to this. Now, you're talking about going to where there were soldiers, and we were a part of it. And I was going to this course, and he tells the chap that sent me on it, Grant. He said, Robert, I'm sending you on this course, a wireless course. I was a quarter. And I said, yeah, okay, I'm fine. Nobody else knew it, so I don't know what's wrong. But when I arrived in Boring, and there was chaps there from the Hussars, and the chaps from Tank Regiments, and all that. And I was meeting these for the first time, and we arrived in Boring with a proper course there, a proper man in charge of it. And we sat down, and he says to me and everybody, what's your speed? You see, and of course, I didn't know what he was talking about. And he says, speed, what do you, because I don't know what you mean. He said, how do you send, and what do you send your Morse and receive it? I said, I don't know about Morse. You see, nothing about Morse, what the hell are you doing here, sort of thing. And I said, well, I was sent here. Well, he said, I don't know. Well, he said, you're going to live in a bloody Morse group frontal. Well, I was in a little hut with a load of good lads, you know, from other regiments, and they taught me that Morse code on a little, you had a little pad to lay on with a battery, and you tapped it on that. Well, you know something? They drummed that Morse code into me day after day and night after night until I did the whole course at Bovington on the 19 set. Nobody else knew in the regiment knew anything about it. And I did that course, and I got a P1, and I came back with that P1 from the course. I haven't learned that Morse code, and I came back. And I'd see the colonel then, Grant, he said, you want to see the colonel? And the colonel, he didn't treat me again, made me signal sergeant. And that was life changing rapidly for me. Suddenly, the whole world, and I became signal sergeant, because I was in his tank. We got Cooper, was one of the colonels, Lieutenant Colonel Cooper, regular, lived his own little world, you know, and I was in the tank with him, and we used to go on.
Now, these were these Mark 6B tanks?
No. We moved up to other tanks now. The 19 set was in them, I can't remember what they were. This is me out of contacts again. I went to the coast from Northern Ireland. The regiment moved to the east coast, up from Scarborough, Bridlington. The regiment moved to Bridlington from Ireland, and I was still in Bonington. And I came back to the regiment from Bonington, and I was made signal sergeant.
Now, before we leave Ireland, anything else about Ireland?
No, Ireland. Well, other than the fact that when I was doing DR in Ireland, I had to go to Belfast from the Majig, I nipped into Belfast, and I'd come back with orders from whoever was in Belfast to bring them back to the regiment. But sometimes I used to go up one way, I'd come down through under the mountains of Moore and back to Newry, when we were in Newry, do a whole circuit around there. I was doing well. And in Ireland, of course, with the bikes again, being so good in bikes, we put a team into the Irish, the Army of Eli Novelty Charles in Northern Ireland, and I was in that team.
What do you remember of that then? The reliability, the what trials?
Reliability. And of course, you went through mud and water, up hills and down hills, a reliability course in Northern Ireland, and there was a team of three. There was a chap called Noakes, who lived in Cooper here, he was in, and a chap called McKenzie, and myself, a team of three, and we represented regiment and the Army of Reliability Trials in Northern Ireland, whereabouts I can't remember. It was there at Killian, must have been in the Mountains of Moore area, I would have thought. And we had to do all these courses, go through, come down hills between tapes like that, you know, and keep the exhaust lifter up to keep the thing ticking over. And we did that, the damn experience, didn't win it, but we were there, and that was in Northern Ireland.
How did you get on with the Irish civilians?
This has nothing to do with the fighting forward. I was absolutely thunderstruck when we went to Northern Ireland. Again, you asked if we knew there was a war coming and whatnot. Nothing geared us up for what we were going to meet in Northern Ireland, the lightness people led, and the attitude. And it didn't happen in Scotland, you see. And to live in Northern Ireland where people didn't speak to people, where if you were a certain religion, you didn't get a job, you were born to be idle, it really was terrible. But it didn't affect us. Because I suppose we were disassociated from it, because we were a Scottish regiment in Northern Ireland and we were well received. But of course, thinking about it now, we must have been well received by the Protestant, who of course were the predominant people anyway, because we were very well received. And we were almost 100% Protestant. You understand? We were again, still hadn't got intakes. We got a few intakes in Farnham. That was in Farnham was the very first time where we got soldiers coming into the squadron from training course. Because by that time we were sending away our youngsters. Remember, this is way out of context, you realise. But we were sending away our youngsters then. A lot of good lads went away, 18 and 19, went away. Schofield, the chap who went bald in Kirkcaldy, went away because he was young, and he ended up in the North End Children's Day. And I saw him, he came to see us in Goodwood, we were back, and he came to see us in Goodwood when the North End Children were going up in Goodwood. Of course, they were nearly at Coley, was killed. But I remember him coming to see us, just because we were going up, and I said, well, we're just here. We were in the Glyderfield area at that time, and that was Schofield. So we were losing these people because of their age. We didn't keep anybody under a set. We were getting rid of. We had 18s and 19s in 1939. Now, we were in Ireland in 19... Well, we were in Farnham in early 1940, and we still had 18s and 19s, and we were slowly getting rid of them and bringing in our people. So there we are.
Anything else about Ireland, then?
Ireland. We got on fine with the people. We were well received. We lived well. Can't think of that. We did our church parades. We had Ireland. Well, Sellers tells the story, because we told Sellers how we were gearing up for Christmas there, and all the Christmas parties were arranged, and we had to go, we were sent to Newry. And the Newry, the Dungannon people were trying to keep us over Christmas, and they sent the telegram, I'm sure it's in Seth's book, they sent the telegram down to, and the telegram back to Churchill saying that we had to go, and it was sad. And how, when we were in Dungannon, when we were down in Newry, then of course they sent the buses down to take anybody back to Dungannon on Christmas Day who wasn't on duty to enjoy themselves at Christmas parties.
What were the Christmas parties like in Dungannon? Do you remember them?
No, I didn't go. I was on duty, but I didn't go to them. But then they did it, and it was fabulous. So we arrived in Newry.
Now, where were you billeted at Newry?
Well, Newry, they were billeted in Nissen Huts, somewhere in Nissen Huts, somewhere in a hall. We were at an old mill just outside the village. It was an old mill, and we were stationed in there, and we walked back in there. Newry, well, again, when I say Newry, I'm wrong, it's Bestwick. It was Bestwick that we were in. Newry was the town down the road. We were never stationed in Newry. We were stationed in Bestwick.
And what were you doing there? Any stories of your time there?
No, we were just doing our exercises. We were doing border patrols. No sign of danger, no feeling of any danger in these days. We had to keep all our personal arms, of course, at night time on chains in one central area, through the wall. But we didn't have any great feeling of any danger.
Now, it was in July 1941 that they came back to Whitby in Yorkshire, not to slip of the tongue, Bridlington was later.
So they came back to, so I must have left in June, because it was a fairly long course, by the way. I can't remember how long it was, but I was away for a while. And remember, when I went there, I was on this entire wireless course, the 19 set, which was a new set anyhow, and I was there a long time in that camp. And I came back to Bridlington definitely, because it was in Bridlington I set up the wireless school.
Right, now, where were they billeted in Whitby? Whitby, not Bridlington.
No, in Whitby we were billeted in houses. I can't remember the name, but it wasn't far. It was behind the Royal Hotel. I know the Royal Hotel now on the Esplanade. It was behind them. There was a big street of houses, and we were nearly in every one of them. There was a church at the top.
Had they been cleared?
There was no buildings in it.
And while you were at Whitby, this is where you set up the signal school.
Well, when I came back, I was a corporal when I went on the course, remember, to the Boffington. I came back mainly because nobody else had been on the course or had gone on the course and made anything of it. And I got a P1 from it. I went to see the colonel, who was Cooper. Colonel Cooper was in Whitby, definitely. And he was a real man, a professional soldier. And Grantley then told me that I was being made sergeant, and I would be in the sergeant's mess, and I would be the signal sergeant. And that happened on my return and my eventually arriving in Whitby.
Now, how were you starting? How were you received into the sergeant's mess then?
Well,
and what was the sergeant's mess at Whitby, and that sort of thing?
Well, that's right. I didn't really, but this time I found out, of course, in the sergeant's mess when I went there, first of all, there was a lot of, away from duties. It was a lot of drinking going on, and women in the mess at night. And neither of these things, I'm afraid, were high on my priority list. I thought, I've got these things. I wasn't involved very heavily, other than being there and involved. Totally involved with my work.
Now, a signal sergeant, were you in charge of a signal section?
No. What happened was then, as a signal sergeant, I was automatically the colonel's operator.
Now, what did that entail?
That means you're in the turret with the colonel. We must have had covenanters or something like that, covenanters, I think. I can't remember for sure, but I was in his tank with him, me, and a driver.
And can you give us a description of the characteristics of the Covenanter? Because it's not a very well-known tank now, is it? No, and people don't know much about it. What do you remember of the Covenanter? What was it like?
I was quite comfortable in it as such. I didn't find any... I didn't really... To me, it was just a vehicle. I never ever discussed it as a war weapon at all. I didn't have anything to do with that. It was a good... The thing that really surprised me about the Covenanter, for instance, I was Colonel Cooper, who eventually became a brigadier. And
this is Cooper, C-O-O-P-E-R, is it?
He was a well-known army man, Cooper. He came to us, and it was he who took Major Grant out of a fighting squadron and put him in an HQ squadron. And he's chained all the regiments around. He was a really organiser. But I don't know.
What was he like as a chap then, Cooper?
Well, he was kind of a chap when he would we'd go on exercises, and when he came into the turret, first of all, I remember being in a turret with him in the tank, and he says to me, "What's this, Will Moore?" And I said, "That's the gun, mantle, that's the gun, you see." Well, he said, "I want it out." So he didn't want any, he wanted a turret with him and me and a place for maps, because this man Cooper, who went on in the army to become something, he wanted maps, he wanted to know what was happening here and there and all around about him, you know. He had great ideas.
So he took the gun out?
No, he didn't. It didn't happen, but that's what he wanted to happen. I'm sorry. You were asking what I thought of him, you see. And I said, "Here's the lad, we're going to go to war with a thing sticking out the front that kind of fired guns, you see." But we didn't work with him very long. As I said, I was there. I'm trying to recall that. We did exercises. We did the messages. My biggest concern, of course, was having returned just then from a wireless course, having been given a chap called Traherne, a captain, Raymond Traherne, killed at Goodwood. He was put in charge of the wireless course, all right, or school as I called it. And I was second in command to him. And that was at the top of the street where we lived, another one of these houses which we got to myself. And there we operated the wireless school and trained all our operators in the 19th set.
The 19th set would be the set in each of the Covenanter tanks.
Absolutely.
Now, what could you give a quick rundown on what the 19th set was like and your opinion of it?
My opinion, the 19th set was an excellent set. It was far too complicated, truly. For instance, we work on a frequency. The 19th set worked on two frequencies, as I remember. You could net into one frequency and net into a second frequency. The theory being, if you broke the first frequency, you could switch the whole regiment onto the second frequency. You see? It could never happen. But it all had to be taught to these lads. Now, we're talking about, we had at least 30 odd operators in these various tanks. And we had to teach them how to do that. The biggest problem with teaching them was the fact that the set encompassed two other sets. It encompassed the A set, which was the main set, the B set, which was the troop set, and the intercom. All worked through the 19th set, and all worked through the same microphone. And it was an absolute nightmare, because I remember we were operating it through lads who were working on farms and fife, and really, they didn't realise or comprehend everything they were doing. And many times we were jammed on the air because somebody, McKenzie, was speaking to somebody else in the turret of the tank and jamming the whole thing up. So we had to do this thing, but my main object in life, having come home with this knowledge of this set, was to teach them, first of all, how to net in on a frequency.
Now, how did you net in then?
Yes, exactly. Well, I had certain followers, and I would tell them they'd all be in their tanks at a certain time. And I would be putting out on a frequency. I would be putting out a beam at a certain time. You see, and that was it. And they would all net into me, and I would then call up, and they would all answer me.
Now, how would they actually net in? Was it on a dial or?
Yes, they would know. They would know that the frequency was between something and something. You see, that was the frequency. They knew I would be emitting or transmitting this frequency at 6 o'clock. And I would go on the transmit this frequency, and they would net into me, you know, I'd tune it in, and then we would all stop at another pre-arranged time, and I would call them up, and I would call up squadron on duty, and I could tell you, 9 times out of 10, nobody ever answered me. And I used to have to go round these streets, all the tanks were in the streets, by the way, where we were living. I had to go round there from tank to tank and net them in myself and leave my own transmitter bound up, emitting all the time. It was a dreadful thing. It did give me no confidence for ever being able to use wirelesses in tanks.